Okay, let me see. I think that's it. Okay, I want to make sure I don't miss anything. My name is Russell Statz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And I appreciate the privilege of being able to talk to you guys tonight, and having been invited to do this step series. This is the last talk in this series, step 12. I'm going to talk a little bit about, I'm going to share a little bit about my deal, what's going on with me, and how I do this thing, and how I did this thing, and how this thing was foisted upon me, and little sort of images and of what my life is like in AA and how I did it. And, you know, for whatever it's worth, and, you know, this is just the way I did these things, and I want to read a couple things in the book. And I love AA, I love fellowship, I love spiritual fellowship. The last page in the big book says, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. I didn't even know I craved. Did you know you crave fellowship? That's, you know, we try to do whatever we can to shove something to fill that hole, you know, whether it's TV or it's radio or it's alcohol or it's, you know, or it's drugs or it's cars or it's clothes or everything we can to sort of fill whatever that emptiness is. And here in the very back of the big book, it says God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. And we create all sorts of fellowships. And one of the things Bill Wilson said when he was talking about the next frontier, emotional sobriety, it says the real problem with alcoholism is the real situation, besides what they talk about in the book being selfish and self-centered, is that we have unhealthy dependencies. In the Bible, that would be referred to as idolatry. In other words, focusing on things that are not God. Focusing on things that are not permanent, that are toxic, that will eventually let us down, that we can't really depend upon. And that's a hard, it's hard to even know you do that. It's, man, I'll tell you, I didn't want to give up the booze, I didn't want to give up the gals, I didn't want to give up my way of thinking about things, my perception about stuff. But you know, let's suppose that this isn't a dress rehearsal. I mean, let's suppose this isn't a dress rehearsal. I mean, let's suppose that this is the deal. This is it. This is all you get. You know, let's suppose that you get this, and, you know, then you're not going to get to do it again. You're not going to get a do-over. You know what I mean? I'm 64. I don't know about you guys. I know you've got probably some 20-year-olds. And you know, I was at a Bible study. Every Thursday morning I go to a Bible study, which is a spiritual fellowship. It just seems every time I'm with people and I'm hanging out with people these days, it's always, the focus is always upon God, which is probably a good thing for me because we got a world out there that's going insane. At least it seems like it's going insane. It's the rat race and the rats are winning. And it seems to me that the more I hang out with people that are sort of thinking along the lines I'm thinking of, which I find in AA, not everybody in AA, but people in AA, people in church, people in different people, the better I feel about myself. And the better I feel about myself, the better I act towards other people. And so we happened to be in Bible study this morning, Thursday morning, and I go to a bunch of those too. And my life is sort of populated with those kind of fellowships. And a friend of mine, a guy I sponsor who's a pastor, said something that, and I had lunch with him today because that's another thing we do. We have lunch every day. I have a fellowship called the Lost Sheep Luncheon Fellowship where, you know, about 200 guys get a text message every day about where we're having lunch. We have lunch at different places. So we get to fellowship at lunch with anywhere from 6 to 30 guys, depending upon who shows up. And just another hour and a half fellowship. And I know it's kind of insane. Well, you know, I used to get in the bar at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'd leave the bar I'd get in the bar at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would leave the bar at 4 o'clock in the morning. What is that? 12 hours? I could spend 12 hours in a bar, 4 o'clock in the afternoon to 4 o'clock in the morning, either in one bar or walking around the bars. That's 12 hours in one day with a wife and child at home. So I don't suppose it's too insane to spend an hour and a half with a bunch of guys having lunch, you know, talking about A, talking about the Bible and different verses and stuff like that. And you know, when I first came to AA, I was sponsored by a guy named Bob Sullivan. He would pick me up at 6 o'clock, 6:30 at night, say, where do you want to go to a meeting? We talk about where we're going to meet. He'd pick me up at 6:30, and we go to dinner, you know, like at 7 o'clock, 7:30. We eat dinner until around 8:30, and then we'd be at the 8:30 meeting, and then the meeting would go from 8:30 to 9:30, and then we would go out and we'd have coffee with a bunch of other guys in AA and cheesecake or something at Pumpernick's or something like that till 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And that's how I didn't know any better. I didn't know that you're supposed to get to the meeting at 8:30 and leave at 9:30 and go home. You know, what I knew, the way I was taught AA is if you go out with your sponsor and he has you for the night. That's how, and that's how I do AA. I pick up Eric. Sometimes I'm with Eric or Pastor Carey or three or four other guys. Last night, I did a meeting for 80 guys down at New Hope, which is a sort of like a Christian ministry 12-step deal. There's 80 guys that are off the street and they have them down at Homestead. And myself and Eric, and we had about two or three other guys, I can't remember who it was. We go to the Big Cheese down there, and we meet at 5 o'clock at the Big Cheese at like 6 o'clock, sit around there until for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I watch them get into arguments about Bible verses and stuff like that and get all angry at each other and everything, the crazy stuff like that. And then we go off to the meeting with these guys, you know, for about an hour or so, hour and a half, and that's the way I do AA. That's the way I was taught to do AA. Not an hour. It's like 3 hours, you know? And then, you know, like a nonstop, you know? I mean, listen, what do I have that's better to do than this? It's like when I was talking with that guy at Jimmy's that day, and that young guy, I was about 5 years sober and 5 or 6 years sober, and he's looking at me. I just took him to his first meeting, and I'm talking with him over some coffee, and he says, that was a good meeting. I really liked that meeting. He says, but what do you do for fun? And I didn't know how to explain to him that I was having the best time of my life. I mean, AA really sort of screws you up, you know. It really screws you up, you know. He was looking for the party. He was looking for the dancing girls. And, you know, you're at this party, you're going to that party. And I was already at the party. I was at the continuous banquet party. I was being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which you cannot even dream. I was experiencing much of heaven. Because I was with another alcoholic, and I was trying to help him, and there was something about that was just exciting me, you know, that I felt useful. I felt like I was doing what God wanted me to do, you know. I was feeling good about myself, you know. It's very unusual for an alcoholic to feel good about themselves. Most of the time, even when we feel good about ourselves, it's sort of like a prideful feeling good. We actually feel shitty about ourselves. It's a weird kind of good, you know. It's like a comparison good. Well, I'm better than him, or I'm great now, or whatever, just waiting to tell yourself you're a piece of crap. You know, it's like an up and down. It's a whole different thing. Page 15 of the big book. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problem. This isn't Bill's story. Apparently, everybody I've ever met that has had long-term sobriety in AA, who's the real deal, you know, the genuine article. Anybody ever see? You got to go see a movie called Leap of Faith with Steve Martin. Everybody ever see that? Where he talks about the genuine article, the real deal. The real deal and the general article. That's the fellowship of the Spirit. They talk about that in the last page of the big book. They say we'll see you in the fellowship of the Spirit. That's the fellowship that's populated by the guys by the men. You remember, you see there's two, you got two deals in AA. You got the men and you got the boys. You know, the 1 Corinthians 13, which the founders felt, if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, was a book that had to be studied, which was a book in the Bible that had to be studied, a chapter that they felt was absolutely essential. That's not me quoting. That's Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. That's a quote from the founders, first 4 years. You know, the big book says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Their path was to thoroughly study Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the book of James and 1 Corinthians 13. 1 Corinthians 13 says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, I acted like a child. When I became a man, I put childish things away. And you know, it's tough to put childish things away. I was at the Bible study this morning when I was there. So this guy I was talking to, who I sponsor, is a wonderful guy. He's got a, you know, PhD in theology and all this sort of stuff. So he's, I like talking to him about stuff. And he said something that I sort of differed with because it wasn't my experience. He says, well, you know, most people on the planet think that you're going to die and go to heaven. And we were having lunch today. I said, you know, Woody, I said, you know, I don't think that's true. I think most people on this planet, most of the time, I think most people on the planet that I know of don't think they're ever going to die. That's what I think. I think most people on the planet don't think they're ever going to die. They live life. They know other people die. They know dying is something that probably happens. They sort of think maybe one day they'll die, but nah, probably not. You know what I mean? They see people dying around them, you know, and stuff like that. You know, dying, death is God's way of letting you know you're really not in control. It doesn't really matter it really doesn't matter if you own Microsoft or you own Apple or you got $1 billion. Death is God's way of saying, listen, I'm in charge. You're not. You're really nothing. I'm everything. You know? You're just not scared shitless enough about me to understand what the real deal is. You don't get it. But, you know, what happens is, and so most people sort of live lives, you know, in such ways like they're never going to die. So when that's the deal, what I found in my own personal life is you focus on stupid stuff. You focus on stuff that's temporary and not important. He talks about it in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, don't focus on things that rust and rot. Focus on spiritual things, which is really, if you understand about AA, which is what we're training you to do in here. That's what you're being trained to do in here. You're being trained to focus on things that are lasting forever, like helping people, like loving on people. Like this is like the forever stuff. This is the permanent stuff here. Out there, it's the cars and it's the girls and it's the guys and it's the sex. It's the non-permanent stuff that wears off in 5 seconds. It's the money. It's the things. It's the stuff that doesn't last, that doesn't really satisfy anyway. And somehow, when you're done with it, you feel worse than when you started off with it. You know, it's somehow sort of toxic. You know, even if you experience it, if it helps you, it gives you this weird sort of craving for stuff that never really satisfy. It's just not the right deal. It's not the genuine deal. And so we come in here, and you know, as you grow older, I'm 64 now. I'll be 65, and you know, you start realizing. You know, I've had some like what happens to you when you get older. You know, you start getting these aches, you start getting pains, and I've had cancer a couple times and stuff like that. It becomes apparent to you that you pretty much are aware of the fact that you probably lived most of your life already. And death becomes a real thing. But, you know, if you believe in God, it's not really a scary thing. It's not a scary thing to me at all. It really isn't. I mean, listen, I'd rather not be there when it happens. But, you know, I mean, it's not that I'm looking to die, but I'm saying I don't sit around and worry about it or dwell upon it because of my faith. You understand? But what it does is, I guess it's hard for an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old or a 30-year-old or some 40-year-olds or some 50-year-olds to think in terms of the fact that they only have a limited time on the planet. But what happens is when you get a sense of perspective of the fact that how short a time we have in here, and you understand you only have that a little ways to go, what happens is you become very, very cognizant of where you spend your time and who you spend your time with and what you spend your time thinking about. I don't want to waste time. I don't want to waste time. I don't want to waste time with people that are wasting my time, or thoughts that are wasting my time, or emotions that are wasting my time, or feelings that are wasting my time. I want to pack into life things that are things that I think God wants me to do. I want to think of, we were talking about that line in Philippians 4, whatever's good, whatever's right, whatever wonderful, whatever's of good report, think of these things, and the peace of God that transcends all understanding will be upon you. You know, I want to think of those good things. I don't want to think about the stuff that I thought about when I was drinking or a drugging or I was in a bar. So I don't want to think about, I don't want to hang out with people that are talking about that stuff. I just don't have the time. You know, I got grandkids, I got kids, I got stuff going on, I got people I sponsor. You know, I want to hang around with those people that think the way I think. You know, it's a free country, I'm allowed to do that. And if I hang around with people that don't think the way I think, it's only because I'm trying to get them, I'm trying to show them the way I think. I'm trying to go around and do this deal, show them the way I think so I can maybe help them out, so they can get a piece of whatever I got going for me, if they want what I got going for me, you know? My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problem. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which I found little work. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink, but I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I've gone to my old hospital in despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. A design for living that works in rough going. You know, who'd have thought a bunch of people that are selfish and self-centered that want to sit around and just talk about what you wouldn't believe what happened to me today. We want to talk about our feelings. We want to talk about, you know, how we're being treated. We want to talk about their job. Who would think that the answer to our problems is to go out and just focus on helping other people? You know, so I get these, and all the men that I've ever known that are real contenders, you know, as they say, and I'm not leaving out the ladies, but I talk in terms because I hung out with the men, you know what I mean? Because I love the women. I love AA women. I love the women, you know, but you know, women can be a distraction for me. You know what I mean, guys? They can distract me, you know, and so I sort of like, I believe in this thing, men with men, women with women thing. The men I hung out with, the ones that I looked up to, the ones that I thought were the real deal, what they talk about in the sixth step, because apparently there's a separation, there must be, they talk about it in the sixth step, and they say this is the step that separates the men from the boys, from the people who are just here to join the not drinking club and have a good time and then go out and, you know, chase the stuff that you were chasing before you got in here. And the people that are really seeking after, what do they say the test of the sixth step is? The person is repeatedly trying to work these things with all his might so that he can grow in the image and likeness of his creator. Sounds a little religious. Well, the whole thing's religious. It comes from religion. But that shouldn't scare you off unless you're one of the boys. I don't know. But the men, doesn't scare the men off, I can tell you that. Men don't worry about religion. They're not scared about religion because they've read the big book and it says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. Most of the people who were really in this, who were the men, were religious. They belonged to religious denominations. They weren't pissed off at priests or rabbis or any of that stuff. They were into this stuff, you know. Because they were grown-ups, you know. They weren't sucking their thumbs, hanging around corners, pissed off at the church and pissed off at this and everything. They wanted to grow. They wanted to be grown-ups. They wanted to be, you know, like 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds and people that raised families and, you know, had long-term marriages and stuff like that. They didn't want to be alcoholics. They didn't want to be like active alcoholics are, always pissing, moaning, criticizing anything that's good or decent. You know what I mean? They wanted to be the real deal. So, in any event, so it says right, let me see what we got here. I've earmarked a couple of pages that I wanted to talk about in terms of the 12-step work. You know, I do quite a lot of that stuff, sort of. This I consider what we're doing right now. Oh, look at this. This is on the family afterwards. Alcoholics who have derided religious people will be, it says, though a family has no religious connections, they may wish to make contact or take membership in a religious body. Alcoholics who have derided religious people will be helped by such contacts. Being possessed of a spiritual experience, the alcoholic will find that he has much in common with these people, though he may differ with them on many matters. If he does not argue about religion, he will make many new friends and is sure to find new avenues of usefulness and pleasure. He and his family can be a bright spot in such congregations. He may bring new hope and new courage to many a priest, minister, or rabbi who gives his all to ministers in a troubled world. It's interesting. You know that was in the book Alcoholics Anonymous? They don't talk about it. Well, some people find that page. There are people that find that page. There are many people that find that page. They find that page, they find meetings that you guys don't even know about. They find fellowships that you guys don't even know about. There's stuff going on in this world, believe me, that most people in AA don't even know about. People that read that stuff find that stuff, you know? Did you know in the book it says we encourage, did you know in this book it says we encourage church membership? It says we encourage, did you know that it says that? It says that in this book. Right in this book it says we encourage it, you know? You wouldn't know that if you went to most AA meetings. You would think we discourage it. Wouldn't you think that? Most AA meetings, you would think most AA, you know, wouldn't you think most, and if you go to most AA meetings that they sort of, you know, sort of look down on the church and they, you know, you shouldn't talk about that. You know, the actual program of recovery encourages church membership. I'm not saying you should belong to a church. You do whatever you want to do. I mean, it's your dress rehearsal. It's your life. You know, it's your life to do whatever. You can spend whatever time. You could spend it over at the horse races. You can spend it over at the baseball game. You can spend it anywhere you want to spend it. You can spend it down at Macy's. You can spend it looking for cars. You can spend it down at the, you know, you can spend it wherever you want to spend it. You can spend it there. You can spend it at church. Spend it wherever you want to spend it. You know, it's your life. You know, you got a limited amount of time. Spend it wherever you want to spend it. There are consequences to where you spend your life, what you think about, and what you do with your time. There are consequences to that. And who you spend your life with and where you spend your time and what you focus on will determine what your thought life is all about. So if you think crappy all the time, or you find yourself kind of depressed, or you find yourself not fulfilled, or you feel you find yourself with a lot of crappy thoughts, well, it's probably because you're doing crappy stuff and hanging around with crappy people and doing crappy things. And you're just basically full of crap, you know what I mean? And that's basically what you're doing, and you're just doing AA make-believe, and you come here and you don't drink and you think you're actually doing this thing. And which is okay, because it's your life. At least it's not my life. It's not like you're affecting me. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that in a mean way, you know? I mean, I'm all for people, you know, when I sponsor people, you know, I don't beg them to stop drinking. As a matter of fact, I say, I think you ought to drink a little more, you know what I mean? I'm not, you know, everybody's got to have that. Don't rob an alcoholic of his desperation. Don't rob an alcoholic of his last drink. Everybody's got to have their last drink. You know, that there's that great line in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 where it shows what happens when Bill and Bob goes to see, I think it was Bill Dotson, and he's lying in bed, and it shows how they did their 12-step work. And I wonder if, I think I have it right here. I want to read this thing because it's great, you know, as far as their 12-step work. It says this. Let me see whether I can find it. This is what they say. I'm almost positive it was Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Wait a second. Hold on. I'm going to find this thing. It's a great thing to read. Jim's story. Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Here it is. So he's lying in bed in the hospital. This is the guy who I think clocked the nurse. It says, here, this is a 12-step deal with Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. I want you to check out the attitude here. I want you to check out the attitude, okay? So they go and they talk to this guy. It's Bill Dotson. He's the man on the bed. They're talking to him. You know, he's in the hospital. You know, he's like a real corker. There's no AA. You know, you got to really hand it to Bill Wilson when you think about this deal. Here's this guy. He's in Akron, Ohio. He's 1,000 miles away from home. He's got 10 bucks in his pocket. A business deal that he thought he was going to do has make him rich or give him some money just went down the tubes. He knows nobody in this town. He's all alone. There's no AA. There's no big book. There's no sponsors. There's nothing. Nothing. Nada. And he's an alcoholic. He's got like about 6 months or something like that. He's in a hotel lobby. There's a bar. He's hearing the people laugh in a bar. There's no Boulevard Club or any of this stuff going on. And he sits there. This is what he does. And he gets on the phone. And he gets by the church directory. And he calls up ministers. And he makes, I think, 9 or 10 phone calls to ministers trying to see if anybody knows of an alcoholic or somebody with a drinking problem that he can help. Do you know how? And finally, on the ninth phone call, they get him in touch with Henrietta Seibling and gets him in touch with Dr. Bob. And that's why we're all here today. You know how many alcoholics would be able to do that deal? You know why? Because he had that experience in Townsend. He had that experience. He had that deal. He had that, you know, road to Damascus experience. There was something that happened to Bill. You know, how many alcoholics do you think would be able to do that? Come on. Give me a break. Forget it. You could throw them in the treatment centers. You know, they need 15 treatments. They have that kind of deal where you're sitting there all alone, 1,000 miles away. There ain't nothing going on and everything. And you pick up a phone and you could dial up 9 ministers saying, do you know anybody? I'm an alcoholic. I need to find somebody that I can help. We got people here. They come up to me and they're whining and they're crying. They got 3-5 years or something like that. And they don't know what's wrong with them or what's going on with their life. And I said, well, let me ask them, how many people do you sponsor? And they give me that blank stare. What do you mean? How many people do you sponsor? Well, nobody asked me. I said, whatever. 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 Whatever you say, buddy. So, in any event, here we go. He's talking about what happens when he goes. This is Bill Dotson talking about the 12 step that happened when Bill and Bob went to see him. After a while, Bill said, now they're talking to this guy. He's an alcoholic. He's on a bed. I don't know how many people have done 12 step work. Every person that I looked up to, whether it be that mentored me, whether it be Ray O'Keefe, Bob Sullivan, Joe Snyder, you know, Eddie Edwards, whoever it was, whoever the people were that, you know, the guys with the 30, 40 years, the guys were doing that, they were all heavy duty involved in 12-step people. They sponsored 3, 4, 5, 10 people. They sponsored. They would go to detox. It was all about sponsorship, working with new people, working with people, going to meetings. Their whole life was devoted to that. Bill Wilson's whole life was devoted to that. Dr. Bob's whole life was devoted to that. It was a ministry. It wasn't about the law firm. It wasn't about the business. It was about this deal and whatever you did on the outside to make money. That was just so you could further do this deal because that's what you wanted to do more than anything else. Because you were so grateful that you were sober to God. You know, that's why God's sort of an interesting deal because the whole point is to be grateful. It's all about gratitude. It's all about gratitude. Well, you see, here's the deal. If you're going to have gratitude, you got to have God. Because without God, who are you grateful to? Who are you going to be grateful to? Well, you could say, well, I'm grateful to me. But that has nothing to do with gratitude. That has to do with pride and being puffed up. Saying, look what I did. You know, the great thing about gratitude is when you're grateful to God for giving you something that you never got. You understand what I'm saying? It just does something to your mind. It sort of like changes the way you think about things or the way you think about people. You know, it assuages the anger. It assuages the resentments. It changes everything. It changes the way you look at the world. It changes the way you look at people. Because you realize you got something that you didn't even deserve. And it just changes the way it just completely transforms alcoholics that really most of the time sit around feeling sorry for themselves, saying, poor me, pour me a drink. You know, what's going to cut through that? What's the chaser for that? Pour me a drink. You don't know who you're dealing with. Why is this always happening to me? I can't believe it's happening again. All that alcoholic crap that runs through our mind just waiting to come out. What can possibly chase that away? I mean, I know most doctors think we suffer from Valium deficiency. I mean, that's actually, you know, just take a couple of pills and that'll change it, you know. But pills won't, unless they find a pill for integrity or love, you know, that's not going to change it. The only thing that's going to change it is gratitude. And the only way you get gratitude is you got to be grateful to someone. You got to be grateful to something. Well, I digress. After a while, Bill said, they're talking to him on the bed. Now, listen, he says, well, now you've been talking a good long time. Let me talk a minute or two. Now, I want you to get the picture. Anybody who's ever done 12-step work will understand this. Bill says to the guy in the bed, Bill Dotson, who is doing one of these things, you know, saying, you know what alcoholics do. They say things like, you got to listen to me. I was on Relay. My sponsor told me to get on there. Sponsors tell you to do stupid things. I had problems. I went to my sponsor. I said, I have real problems. I told him about my problems. I had about a year. I had incredible problems. I was telling about my problems, and they were terrible problems. They were unbelievable problems. And he looked at me, and he says, you know, Russ, he says, I think it's about time you started making coffee for the group. I said, this guy's not even listening to me. This guy, I'm about to lose my house. I'm going to lose my wife. I'm going to die. My life is over. And he's telling me about making coffee. There's like no talking to him. There's no talk. But you know, I was vulnerable, and I was, you know, what are you going to do? You know, he's my sponsor, so I started making the coffee. You know, even though my life was over. I mean, your life is over. You might as well start making coffee. So I started making the coffee. You know, and. You know, some guy came up to me and he says, well, let me help you with that. I said, no, I'm making the coffee. You know, I'm making my coffee. And I didn't want to go to the meeting the next day, but I had to go because I had to make the coffee. You know, and I had to set up the chairs. And so I made the coffee and I set up the chairs. And, you know, I don't know what happened. I managed to survive. I stopped thinking about that stuff. It was that damn stupid coffee deal. You know what I mean? And then after 18 months, I said, I've been making coffee for 18 months. I'm sick and tired. I want to get rid. I can't make it anymore. So I would ask people to make. I said, will you do the coffee? He says, no. He says, will you do the coffee? No. And I went to my sponsor. I said, I've been doing the coffee for 18 months for this crazy group. And I said, I can't do the coffee. I'd like somebody else to take over the coffee. And nobody's taking over the coffee. He says, Russell, these are alcoholics. Nobody's going to take over the coffee. When all is said and done in A, there'll be more said and done. They'll never take over the coffee. He says, what am I going to do? I'm stuck here. It's like a life sentence. You know, I'll never get out of it. He says, listen, this is what you do. Don't make the coffee anymore. I had become like an Al-Anoner, codependent, you know what I mean? He says, don't make the coffee. He says, trust me, somebody will make the coffee. So the next time I didn't make the coffee, I said, I'm not making the coffee. I didn't make the coffee. Somebody stepped up and started making the coffee. You know, I mean, that's what they do. My sponsor would tell me, you know, he would say to me, you know, somebody needs to chair the intergroup banquet. I think you're the guy. I didn't think I was the guy, so I'm the guy, 2 years in a row doing that. He says, you know, somebody needs to be the intergroup rep. Somebody needs the secretary of the group. This group needs this. So, you need to get on Relay. Relay. I wasn't even thinking about Relay. Every decent idea that helped me out having to do with service was not my idea. It was some guy's idea who sponsored me. He had an idea of what he thought I should do. And so I followed him because I had a sponsor, because I had an intimate relationship with my sponsor, because I listened to my sponsor. And I had a relationship, because my sponsors were guys that would pick me up, take me out to dinner, and I'd have relationships with them, like AA Daddy. So when they told me to do something, sometimes I'd piss them over. Most of the time, I'd end up doing it. You know, if I didn't have these guys and that relationship with those guys, I would have never done any of this stuff. And you don't experience the incredible things that happen to you until you're doing them for 3 years, and then you say, "Man, I'm glad I started doing this. Why did I start doing this? You know, oh yeah, you told me to do it." I'm on AA Relay from 8 on Friday nights from 8 o'clock at no, it wasn't from 11 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock in the morning every Friday night for 8 years. If you called up AA in Dade County, you got me. Do you know what it's like to be woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, 11 o'clock at night, talking to some guy who's either drunk or sober or whatever on the phone? Most of it is bullshit. Most of it is people, you know, they talk to him for 3 hours and you say, well, about this, you want to stop drinking? And he says, no, I don't want to stop drinking. They're lonely. They just want to, you learn survival techniques, you know, You give them like about 5 minutes, you know, and they say, listen, you want to stop drinking? No, I don't want to stop drinking. He says, have a nice life, you know? I mean, you learn how to deal with alcoholics, you know? They call you up on the phone, they say, I'm out here. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm out here on 33rd Street, you know, and he says, I want to go to detox. I said, well, it's 40 blocks away. Start walking now. You'll make it by sunrise. He says, well, that's not the way we do it in Connecticut. You know, he says, what do you think? This is a taxi cab company? He says, you know, you walk over, and he says, what's your name? Russell. Russell what? He says, Russell. He says, trust me. He says, I'm the only Russell. He says, I said, you're not going to report me, are you? I wouldn't want to lose this job. I don't know how to tell him. I've had it like for 4 years. Nobody's taking it away from me. You know what I mean? How do you learn how to work with alcoholics? How alcoholics even think or what's going on? But every once in a while, you get these gals, they call you up and says, I'm a PhD. I've got a daughter. I've been to 15 treatment centers. I was sober a year. And I said, I'm starting drinking and I'm a little worried. So, you know, I'm a little worried. And I said, I need help and everything like that. But whatever you do, listen to me. But don't talk to me. I don't want to hear anything about AA. I said, honey, listen, I got to tell you this. I said, you know, my name's Russell. I'm sober 4 years or whatever it is, 5 years. I'm sober through Alcoholics Anonymous. You called up the AA hotline. You got a PhD, right? You called up the AA hotline. You're talking to a guy in AA. I'm sober because I go to AA. We start off the conversation, say you're worried about drinking, but you don't want to talk about AA. That's like a non-starter here, you know what I mean? What's your name? You're not going to report me, are you? You know. So you know, this is the stuff that happens to you when you get out there and you're doing this stuff and you're forcing. And how many people do this stuff? I'm not saying look at me, I do this stuff, but you know how many people I run to AA that are miserable in AA. They're miserable in their lives. They don't do any service. They don't do any service. They don't sponsor anybody. And you know what they do? They do what most alcoholics do. They put the blame on the other people. Well, nobody asks me. Well, nobody does this. Well, I don't know how to do that. You know, I don't know where the deal is. It's like alcoholics who could find a beer keg in the middle of Alaska. You understand what I'm saying? Somehow can't find the meetings. They can't find the service jobs. They can't find anything. You know? You understand? Because, you know, let's face it. Here's the bottom line. They're lazy and they're selfish. And they're not going here to help anybody. They're not really interested. They're just going here to feel better. To them, going to AA is just like having a drink or popping a pill or something like that. It's just something they do so that they can make it through the day and feel better about themselves. And, you know, they ain't interested in helping other people, you know, because they're not focused on God or any of that stuff. They're just focused on all the stuff they were focused on beforehand. So after a while, so this is good. So Bill's talking to this guy, you see, and this guy won't stop talking. Because he's an alcoholic. That's what they do. You know, they say, you got to listen. You know, that's what they say to you. They say, you got to listen. I say, no, I don't. They can't believe it. I said, no, I don't. I don't have to listen to you. I don't want to listen to you. There's nothing you got that I want. After a while, Bill said, well, now you've been talking a good long time. Let me talk a minute or two. This is Bill Wilson asking the guy to let him talk. Then this is the next line. You'll love this. So after hearing some more of my story, it was the guy didn't stop talking. He turned around and said to Doc, I don't think he knew I heard him, but I did. He said, well, I believe he's worth saving and working on. They said this to me. This is what they said. This is what they said to this guy. Do you want to quit drinking? How's that for a question? How's that for a question? They didn't beg him to stop or say, you really got to stop. They said, do you want to quit? It's none of our business about your drinking. We're not up here trying to take any of your rights or privileges away from you. But we have a program whereby we think we can stay sober. Part of that program is that we take it to someone else who needs it and wants it. Needs it and wants it. Now listen to this. You're going to like this line. And by then, this was in the first 4 years. So you know what their program was? Reading the Bible, praying and meditating, and having morning time, all that sort of, that's what their program was. It's all about that stuff. There was no big book. It says, now listen to this. You're going to like this. Now, if this is what they say to the guy. Now, if you don't want it, we'll not take up your time. And we'll be going and looking for someone else. Now, if you don't want it, we'll be going, we'll not take up your time. I think they're really saying we're not going to waste our time. Because there may be people that want this thing out there. We'll not take up your time, and we'll be going and looking for someone else. I got people that come in here and they say, How am I gonna help this guy? I can't seem to help that guy. This guy starts drinking. I said, well, what's your problem? What's the problem? Find somebody else. How am I gonna get this guy sober? I said, you're not. You don't have any power to get anybody sober. Where are you gonna get the power? God has all the power. There is one who has all power. That one is God, and you find them now. Where are you gonna get the power? What are you wanting to cry about? This guy drank on me. I was sponsored when he drank on me. He didn't drink on you. He drank. You know, what are you feeling sorry for yourself? Yeah, like you think if you stay sober, it has anything to you? You think if you stay sober, it has anything to do for you with you? You think you like take credit for that? Look at my guy, I got him sober or something like that. You listen, you can't take credit for it. You drink, you know. Somebody drink. Hey, if somebody wants to use my meetings or anything I say in a meeting as an excuse for drink, please do it. Announce it. Russell said this and I drank, okay? Because that's the only way. This is like a self-cleaning oven. The only way to get rid of the bullshit is people have to drink. Do you know what this place would look like? We know what this place would look like if people didn't drink. That's what it's like. Every 2 years, the bullshit burns off. Drinking booze is the cleansing agent in here. You do this thing right, you stay for 20, 30 years. You get it. You don't do this thing right, you drink. You're out of here. It cleans the place up. It purifies the place. Alcohol is not our enemy. It's our friend. People who are not in this thing, people who are dilettantes, people who are not focused on this thing, people like this is a joke and everything, you know what happens? They drink. If they all stayed here, we'd have fist fights in this place. The reason why people are serious and this thing ties together is because this is made up of people, for the most part, that want to stop drinking and take this thing seriously. I mean, that's the bottom line on this deal. So here we go. Let's see what this says right here. Earmarked. This is one of my favorites. You know, I read this all the time. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. This is in the story he sold himself short. Acceptance of things as they are as we place the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant themselves, with tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. That's what I want. That's what I got. Those are the people I hang out with. Those are who I hang out with. I don't hang out with the naysayers. I don't hang out with the crybabies or the thumb-sucking crybabies. I don't hang out with the people who are saying the if-onlyers or the yes-butters. I used to be an if-onlyer, yes-butter. I hang out with those people. This is the guy. I read that stuff. I want. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take. You're not even ready to take the steps unless you want what we have. You got to develop a we. He's part of my we. Those are the guys I wanted. Those are the guys I hung out with. Those are the guys I want to hang out with. You are who you hang out with. You lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. I mean, it's as simple as that. So if we go back to Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, how about this one? This is Bill Wilson. Now, Bill Dotson, that's the guy in the bed. Remember they said, you know, that he finally gets out and he gets sober. He's wonderful, wonderful man. So he wrote his story on this thing. So here's what he says. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. A release, a happiness, a something a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more. I knew there was something I hadn't got. I used to go to these meetings, and I'd see these guys that had 20, 30 years. You know, I had to have 3 months, or I'd have a year or something like that. I'm like wackier. I'm like nuts, you know? I mean, it was good, except for the times when it was bad. You know, I mean, it wasn't bad sobriety. It was just first 10 years, 20, you know, it was craziness. There was always something to worry about, something to be pissed off at. There was always, I needed a meeting. Nothing wrong with me needing a meeting. Nothing wrong with me, you know? There's nothing wrong with needing a meeting. I needed a meeting. I needed a meeting. But, you know, and man, I thought I would never get to the point where, you know, I go to the meetings mostly now because maybe there's somebody there I can help. I'm just reporting. I go to a meeting, I said, maybe there's somebody there. Maybe I can be helpful to somebody. God, let me be helpful to somebody. Let me help somebody. Just put somebody in my place where I can help them. You know, that's the deal. So here it says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, or something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answers. I knew there was something more, something that I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I'd come out of the hospital, Bill Wilson was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch. We're in the kitchen eating lunch. We were eating lunch. And I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. This is like when I used to focus on my sponsor, you know, Ray O'Keefe, or when I used to spoke around Ray O'Keefe or my sponsor, Bob Sullivan or Joe Snyder or something like that. I'd be focused on that, just listening to what they were saying. Half the stuff I didn't understand. Didn't make any sense to me. Bill looked across at my wife and he said this. He said, "Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people." Now let me repeat this. It says, "Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer." Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, "The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep telling other people about it," has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. I mean, that's why I'm here tonight. That's why I was at New Hope last night. I know exactly what he's talking about. I know exactly what that kind of life is about. I know that life, just like he knew that life, just like Joe Snyder knew that life, just like Ray O'Keefe knew that life, just like every real player in this deal knows that life. I know a life where you've got to, listen, this isn't about doing 12-step work. This is about being compelled to do 12-step work. You can't stop doing 12-step work because you're so grateful about what you've got and being sober that you've got to tell other people about this deal. This isn't about like some sort of thing like you have to do it. This is because you want to do it. And if you don't understand that and you don't know that, you want to know something? It's because you don't understand it, you don't know it. And I feel sorry for you. I hope you get it. I can't give it to you. But I want you to know that it's around. I don't want you to think that this is some sort of theory and that there are other people that don't got it. There are people that got this thing all over AA, sprinkled all over Alcoholics Anonymous. And then there are people that give a crap about this. They're just here for themselves and to make themselves feel better and to grab what they can out of this so they can go out and they can make some money or do what they really want to do. But it's clear to me, I understand what these guys are talking about. I understand these guys like they're my twin brothers. I know that feeling. I know exactly what he's talking about, that gratitude. This isn't like book stuff to me. This is like the real deal. This is it. This is my whole life. This is what I do. And I know that, you know, what do they say? They say, big harvest, few workers. Many are called, but few are chosen. There'll be some people in here. There'll be some people in A that are going to get into this thing. You're going to do this deal. You know, the way these guys did this deal. You know, and you're going to reap the rewards of, you know, what does it say? Our real job is, what does it say in AA? I mean, it's very clear. AA is the clearest thing in the world that's muddled up by our rationalizations. I'm a rationalizer. I tell myself rational lies. I make believe it says something it doesn't say. I make believe it's not about God when the whole thing is about God. He talks about it. I make believe it's not about doing service and all about service when the whole thing is about service. It says our real job, your real job. What do you think your job is now? Your real job is to be of maximum service to God and other people. It says it in the book. I mean, who could figure the only way you could not figure out what's going on with this deal is if you decide you don't want to figure out what's going on in this deal. And you can tell whether you're not really doing it. You can tell by who your sponsor is. You know, you want to get yourself a sponsor that's not kicking your ass and telling you got to do this deal. It's because you don't want anybody kicking your ass and not telling you to do this deal. Do it, you know. It's because you want to be comfortable and you don't want anybody telling you what to do. You hang out. Listen, it's not your sponsor's fault. You hang out with the people that you hang out with, that you feel comfortable with, so that you can be lazy or do this thing or not do this thing. because you think you're getting away with something, but nobody gets away with anything in here. You don't get away with anything in here. You wind up with 14 years sobriety sucking your thumb, or 19 years sobriety sucking your thumb. You wind up with as a guy or a gal who's based your whole life around a husband or a wife, and one day they're dead or they're gone or something like that, and you got nothing. You wind up as a guy or a gal that's wrapped their whole life around a business or something like that. One day that goes down the tube and you got nothing. You got no relation. You got nothing. And you've been playing games for 14, 15 years or 20 years because you based your life on crap, not on the rock stuff, but on not on the solid stuff, not on the real deal, and thinking you're getting away with something just because you're picking up a medallion in an AA meeting and they're clapping for you. And I'm not putting that stuff down. I'm putting an attitude down that this thing is about not drinking. You know what is about not drinking? It is about not drinking. It is so about not drinking, it's unbelievable. But you want to know something? Somewhere along the line, it becomes different. It becomes more than, somewhere around the sixth step, it becomes more than just not drinking. It becomes something else. Around the sixth step, it becomes something else. We leave the not drinking behind. The not drinking is still important. It really becomes focusing on God and wanting to do His will in your life and wanting to do what He wants you. That deal is all that. And all I can do, you know, this is not, all I can do is just share what it's about. And listen, I can't even take credit for this. I don't even know what I'm doing here. I'm a Jewish kid from New York. You know what I mean? From Great Neck, New York. You know anything about Great Neck, New York? You know what I mean? I'm a kid, you know, like I'm into cars, Playboy magazine. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm a deacon in a Presbyterian church. I don't even understand how I got there. You know what I mean? This is one big cosmic mistake. I mean, I don't even know how this stuff happened. This thing got a hold of me. It screwed me up. I'm screwed up. It's too late. I've been married for 32 years. I got 4 kids, 6 grandkids. Sponsor a bunch of people and sponsored myself. And I'm surrounded by all these crazy people that want to talk about God, and I don't know how this happens. It's a screwed up thing. Don't do what I did. You'll wind up like me. It's terrible, you know. Don't do that deal. Keep on doing what you're doing. God bless you. Thank you very much.